In the world of bass fishing, a book has come out in just about every shape, model, and form. And, you know, pros have got books now. You look across the country, there's all kinds of books about tips and techniques. But one in particular has struck my eye, and it's called Sal Belli, The Obsessive Quest for the World Record Largemouth Bass. And with me today is Monty Burke. And Monty, you're the guy that wrote that book.
I sure am.
Well, you know, it's a really interesting book. And one of the things, I guess the first thing we need to talk about is, even if you're not a bass fishing person or an angler or somebody that follows this sport, absolutely a great book to read. Boy, I tell you, you did your research.
Thank you very much. I started about a year ago, actually, and just sort of jam-packed the year full of research, going out and visiting all these guys and spending... The key of it really was kind of spending a lot of time with these different guys who were chasing the record.
Well, I think it's impressive to note is a lot of these guys are very secretive. A lot of them are kind of aloof. You know, they may be people that aren't necessarily going to tell what they're doing or how they're doing it, but you were able to pry some pretty pertinent information from each of them.
Yeah, when you spend, I mean, the first chapter is about an LAPD motorcycle cop named Bob Krupe, who doesn't speak more than about two words a day, it doesn't seem to me, but when you spend 12 hours on a boat with someone, eventually they start talking, is what I found.
Well, you know, we find that all over the place. I always talk about that with kids and everything else. You know, what a great place to be able to get some conversation going and have some fun as well. But he's not out just bluegill fishing or crappie fishing. This guy's out for the world record bass.
He is. It was really fascinating, actually, to follow these guys, because it's not the way that I typically fish. It's not the way that most Americans typically fish, actually. I mean, they're not doing this necessarily for pleasure. They're certainly not doing it for recreation. You know, they sit out there, they're hunting the biggest, the oldest, the wiliest bass. Bob Krupe and Mike Long and some of these other guys will go hours, will go days, will go weeks, will go months even without even catching a fish. But then when they do catch that fish, it's sometimes over 20 pounds.
Well, you know, you look at some of the stories, you know, of course the world record 22-4 caught by George Perry in Montgomery, Alabama many moons ago. And you think about the size of that fish, 22 pounds, 4 ounces, and everybody is in the quest for that. But there's only a certain group of guys that you highlight that are really trying to catch them and making a living for trying to do it.
Well, I don't know if they're actually making a living. A lot of people are losing their living doing it. But, yeah, it's sort of what I call the lunatic fringe of what's become a huge industry of which you guys are a part of, too. I mean, it's a $12 billion. My research showed it was a $12 billion industry. And these guys pretty much do this for nothing. There's no real money for chasing the world record, not unlike the tournament guys who can make a lot of money fishing in these tournaments. There's not necessarily even that much fame. I mean, of course, you would be famous if you broke the record, but you're not famous if you finish second or if the second biggest bass or the fifth biggest bass or whatever. So the reason they're doing it, I was trying to get to the essence of why these guys would spend all this time and spend all this money and lose their families. I mean, a couple of the guys that I've interviewed no longer have wives because their obsession with catching the world record bass sort of overshadowed their familial duties. So the essence of what I try to do is try to figure out why these guys would do this.
Well, you know, you think about, you know, you hear that if the guy catches a world record, of course, it's worth millions of dollars. But that quest, as you mentioned, I think that's very, very important. The quest isn't really where you make the money. It's if you do it. And it looks like right now, you know, nobody's done it yet.
That's exactly right. And it's interesting because I think you could make the argument, and certainly these guys make the argument, that they are the best bass fishermen in the world because they are fishing for the oldest, smartest, wiliest, biggest bass in the lake that most likely has been caught a couple times. And actually following these guys to watch their techniques and watch them go after these big bass, these big bass are super, super wary, the wariest bass I've ever seen. So it's interesting to me anyway to think about the fact that these guys could be the best bass fishermen in the world, but yet they're not paid like your Danny Browers.
Well, you know, you look at this thing, and some of the things that intrigue me, of course, you know, you talked about Krupe, you talked about Long, but, you know, a lot of the guys that have done it before them, you know, catching those big fish, Ray Easley, some of those guys, but just what goes into their psyche, you know, the trolling motor and how they position the boat and where they go and how early they get up in the morning, all very, very critical things, part of that obsession, I suppose.
Yeah, completely. These guys are the most meticulous fishermen and probably the most meticulous people I've ever been around. I mean, the way that they check and recheck their rods to make sure they're absolutely fine. The way they check and recheck their lines to make sure there are no nicks, and they do the same thing with their hooks. They sharpen the hooks every night. I mean, it takes that sort of dedication because there have only been 12 bass over 20 pounds caught on record. So if you happen to hook into one of those, you certainly don't want to lose it because you didn't check your line and there was a nick in it or you didn't sharpen your hooks.
Well, there's no question about that. You know, it's some of the things I think that come to mind is, you know, you think about catching something that weighs over 20 pounds. You're thinking you got to use 30-pound test, 40-pound test, 50-pound test, whatever that may be. But these guys are not that way, are they?
They're not, especially Bob Kruppi. I mean, he uses 8-pound test, believe it or not. And his reasoning, of course, is that these fish are so smart that they sort of have been caught before and maybe they're very lure wary, so that he wants to use the thinnest pound test he can and get away with it, basically so that he won't spook the fish.
Well, most of these guys, when you look back at them, most of them have never talked to anybody much before about what they're doing and their obsession, but you were able to get them together and really put a book together that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you don't even have to like bass fishing. This thing has got so much research and so much into the psyche of a human being. It's just a great book from that perspective as well.
It was funny how it kind of came together. I mean, I was lucky in a sense because a lot of these guys know each other. So when I would go out to California and talk to Bob Kruppi, for instance, he would talk to me a little bit about Mike Long, and then Mike Long would talk about a guy named Porter Hall, who is now in Mississippi, and he's trying to grow the world record bass on two ponds. So you sort of, you know, by word of mouth, you sort of can figure out the whole story. And a lot of these guys, they know each other. They kind of keep tabs on each other. I mean, in a sense, they're sort of competing with George Perry's fish, but also with each other.
Well, and it's also nerve-wracking to each other because they think about, hey, if I don't catch him, this guy might. I remember a couple of brothers in the book that bothered Bob Kruppi quite a bit.
The Arujo brothers.
Absolutely a great story. You know, he watched them like a hawk at all times.
Yep.
Well, you know, let's talk about the signing tour. You know, you went out and you know, did a little publicity on the book, but you had great response with that.
I'm hoping to go on another tour actually next month, but I did mid-April. I went on a barnstorming tour of the South, which was really fun. Had really nice crowds at most stops, and in Mississippi, I read to 225 people in a packed auditorium, which was really fun. And actually, in Augusta, one of my highlight of the tour has to be in Augusta, where a fellow named Dick Drummond, who's a radio listener, so maybe he's listening to this, drove 90 miles just to come down, and he said to quote, lay his eyes on me. He just had to see what I looked like, and bought a book and had it signed. So that was really nice. So it was just great to go out and meet people. And I still haven't exactly figured out what to write in everybody's books, but I'm getting better at it.
Well, you know, when you get to do that, first of all, you know, it's not everybody that can write a book, and everybody that I've talked to that's read this book has been phenomenally pleased. And, you know, you look at it, and it's entertaining. It's also unbelievable, the psyche. I mean, the things that you were able to pull out of these guys that really have never been heard before.
It was fascinating to hang out. I mean, again, that's not really the way that I fish. I'd rather just go out and kind of relax, but it was very interesting to go hang out with these guys. I mean, because they are the best, they're not that much different. My day job is working at Forbes magazine, and they're not really that much different from the CEOs and from the entrepreneurs that I write about here. I mean, they're very good at what they do. They're very obsessed with what they do. They're trying to reach a goal that some say is unattainable, and they're very competitive. So there are a lot of similarities there. So yeah, it was really fun to sort of hang out and figure out sort of what made them tick.
Well, the bass fan group here that's had the opportunity to read the book, you know, that's funny because we'll sit around and we've talked about it, you know, in meetings and stuff like that. Have you read this book yet? Have you seen this book? And everybody here, you know, we kind of banter back and forth about the book all the time. And it's amazing that, you know, the popularity is just going to get out by word of mouth, but also book signings and some of those kind of things. Where can you get this book?
You can get it hopefully at all bookstores. Barnes & Noble's and big bookstores like that, and even independent bookstores. And it's also on Amazon.com and on BarnesandNoble.com. And I've got a website, too, with a little more information if anyone wants to check it out, which is MontyBurke.com, which is MontyBurke.com.
Well, I tell you, Monty, it's an absolutely phenomenal book. It's called Sow Belly, The Obsessive Quest for the World Record Largemouth Bass. And, folks, if you don't read any book other than this book in a year, you'll be pleased that you picked this one up. There's no question about it. Monty, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Terry Brown, and this has been Bass Fan Radio.